You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, and welcome to The Compass, the podcast documenting the struggles of life as an artist. I'm Leah Walsh.
Hi, everyone. It's been a really busy month for Frankie and I. We figured out we're somehow seeing every member of our extended family in a month. And we're flying out tomorrow to Tampa to a wedding and where we'll see my mom and her husband. And then hopefully things will quiet down after that. But I've been scrambling a bit to get this done and to feel like any sort of individual between going to my day job and coming home and the baby stuff and everything. So that's where I am. I'm struggling, but will prevail. Having a lot of fun in some ways and struggling a lot with others. So that's my little check-in. My guest today is Erin Cherry. That's her full name, but she goes by Cherry. Erin is a fantastic actor who I've been wanting to have on the podcast for a long time. We've tried several times and schedules always got in the way, so I'm really glad that we persisted and managed to get this interview in. We met a long time ago, randomly. I was at the Guthrie doing a summer program before my last year at Juilliard, and she was there performing in A Midsummer Night's Dream. And then we just kept in touch after that, became Facebook friends, realized we had a lot of friends in common. I really admire how dedicated she is and driven about her career. And she actually just won an Emmy, which was very exciting, for her role in an online series that we'll talk all about. So very exciting. Congratulations, Erin. She's just someone who's really thoughtful about how she's living her life and how she's taking care of herself in conjunction with her career as an artist. So I hope you enjoy the 139th episode of The Compass. What do you do to try to keep from going to the dark side as an artist?
Oh, working out. I work out a lot. I go to the gym almost every day except Sundays. Mm-hmm. I get a little OCD about that. Therapy. I'm definitely therapy. And then making sure I have quiet time, giving myself a lot of quiet time, meditating, even if I have to go to church and just sing. I feel like self-care is very important in this business. So I'm glad you asked that question because
I'm
going to
ask
important.
You to scoot in just a tiny bit.
Tiny? Okay.
That's perfect.
All right. But yes, self-care is very important to me, but I do it because I've always been physical all my life. I grew up dancing, always moving, always shaking, and working out gives me that outlet, especially when I'm stressed. I'll do some cardio, I'll go rollerblade, I'll take a gym class. So I do a lot
of
that.
It's a very conscious.
Yes, yes.
Conscious thing for you.
Yeah.
And when I say the dark side, what does that bring up in your mind? What does that look like most often for you?
Oh,
in
gosh.
Relation to your work as an artist?
Shutting down emotionally, dealing with my self-worth, getting depressed because I just, when I beat myself up or try, what I tend to do sometimes, and I'm working on this, not comparing myself to other, it doesn't matter what level you're on, you're always looking and going, why am I not there, or I want to be there. And then I'm going through this process right now of working through dreams unrealized and how to create new dreams and new discovery of dreams. And some of those dreams don't have to be the end, that they still can be realized. And what I mean by that is what I talked about a lot in therapy in the beginning of this phase that I'm in, is that I had an age of by the time I'm this age, I'm going to have this, I'm going to have that, I'm going to be doing this, I'm going to be on the cover of this magazine.
Right.
Things like that, you know.
You come out of
grad school, and next thing you know, you just have these deadlines, as you say. And just sitting in therapy and crying it out and saying, I don't have those things. And what does that mean? And is that a failure? And what successes have I had? Things like that. And so, yeah, the dark side for me is part of grieving through that, having my self-worth and questioning, am I good enough? Why am I here? Am I meant to be doing this? And I can just cry for days. And I allow myself that cleansing, but then I have to pick myself back up and go. But that's what comes up for me. Yeah.
I'm so intrigued by this.
Yes.
What you just mentioned about the dreams unrealized. Is that a term that you spoke about in therapy, or is that something that you've just been developing on your own?
I know, it's just something I just talked about in therapy. I just remember sitting there and just saying, I have all these dreams unrealized. And that's the quote that, you know, that I use because I want to say hopeful for some of them because they're unrealized. They didn't meet the deadline then doesn't mean that they can't meet the deadline in the future if, you know, because I'm trying to let go of deadlines, but whatever that means, like, I could still walk a red carpet or I could still find the partner, right? You know, I could be, and let me give you some backstory. So my career back in the day when I got out of grad school was supposed to be Kerry Washington's career, basically. Mm-hmm. I have my own TV show. I'm married to this beautiful football player. I have two kids. We're walking the red carpet together. You know, I'm on all the cover magazines because at the time, there wasn't a lot of Black women doing that. And so my dream was I wanted to break barriers. Like, I want to be the first of something. I want to be the first to make history in something. And I was like, okay, I want to be this person. And then you wake up one day and you're like, Kerry Washington, who I love, and I think, you know, she's doing a great job. She got Scandal. And then she becomes like, she makes history. And I'm like, okay. And I see that. And I'm like, that was supposed to be me. And grieving that and realizing, okay, that is not your path. And being okay with what the universe gives you and the path that you need to take and go, okay, so if that's not my path, what are you trying to tell me, universe? What are you trying to tell me, God, goddess? Where am I supposed to be? And so I had to grieve that because I woke up one day, I'm like, I don't have that. Right. So what does that mean? Does that mean I failed? You know, things like that. So that's right. Give you some insight of what. Where that was coming from.
No, I need to sit down and evaluate that more specifically for myself. Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
Yeah, dreams unrealized. And some of them
are.
You have to let them go. And then some of them you go, okay, you know what? How can we look at it from a different, with fresh eyes, from a different perspective where you are now and how can you still achieve that? But right. It's hard. It's a very painful journey.
Yeah.
And lots of tears.
How long have you been in New York?
Ooh, 20 years.
Oh my goodness.
Yes, 20 years.
Are you a lifer? You feel like this place is your home now?
I feel like this place is my home now. I do want to be bi-coastal. That's a goal of mine. But I also want to be a homeowner one day. And I know I don't want to own a home in New York City, but I could go upstate or Connecticut mm-hmm. or somewhere. But I do know that I don't want to go back to the West Coast. I grew up on the West Coast. I grew up in Las Vegas.
Uh-huh.
And
did you go to that performing arts high school?
No, where,
like,
I wish.
Regina went there. A bunch of my friends from undergrad went there too.
Yes. Okay. I wish. Because it's so funny because everybody asked me if I know Routine, and I wish. We never met across, our paths never crossed. And,
she
you know.
Graduated from my undergrad mm-hmm. the spring before I started.
Oh, wow.
And then she went to Juilliard and graduated. And okay. We kind of met in between, and she gave me some advice going there, but she graduated the spring before I started.
Wow. It's like 6 degrees of separation. Yeah. But yes, no, I haven't met her. I would love to meet her, but she's on Queen Sugar now, and she's doing an amazing job. Every time I bring up Vegas, people go, oh, you guys, do you guys know each other? You guys, are you guys related? You guys look like sisters, you guys. And I'm like, I wish, but no. But no, I just, growing up on the West Coast, I always felt out of place in a lot of ways because everything's slower pace. Hmm. The minute I learned how to drive, I was always in LA at the beach, you know, because it's only 4 hours. And I would just hang out on the beach and just dream about my life. And I remember the first time I visited New York, I was just like, I belong in New York. And so since that first visit back in the day, I just kept saying, when I'm done with school, when I'm ready, when I grow up, in quotes, I want to move to New York. And then I went to grad school. I went to Rutgers in Jersey. Mm-hmm. And then I decided to stay here in New York and not go back to LA. And I still feel that way. Even when I go back to LA now, when I was just there a couple of months ago, I'll visit and I can be there for work, but I just, something about New York that just grabs me. It's like a
that pace.
Yes, the pace. It's like an abusive relationship. Like I love and I hate you, yes. But I just can't be without you kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I do need to get away. There's times where I'm like, okay, I want to slow down. I want to get away.
It's better the more you leave, I feel like. Yeah. Spend a little bit of time away and then it's sweeter when you come back.
It's sweeter when you come back. I agree with that. Yeah, totally definitely. Yeah.
What does your family think of you making a life as an artist? Are any of them in a creative field as well?
No, my mother was a teacher. She's retired. My stepfather worked in Area 51. Mm-hmm. So I don't even know half the things he did. He couldn't tell me. And my dad is artistic. When I was growing up, he wanted to be a comedian. So I have images of him. It was short lived, but I have images of him writing his jokes, telling his, you know, getting his jokes out on the family, seeing if we liked them. And I remember going to visit him, like seeing him on stage. And my mother loved the arts. So when I was a young buck, she would take me to see plays. And my mom said she would take me even when I was a baby, young. But my first memory is I was 7. And she said we were on some college campus. I can't remember where we were, but we were seeing a college campus play. And they were doing For Colored Girls. And mm-hmm. I remember it to this day, because I remember sitting on the edge of my seat, my eyes just open like diamonds, you know, just like silver coins. And I don't know what's going on. But I just remember looking at my mother going, I want to do this. And at the time, I was already like dancing and things like that, but not really acting or theater. And then my mom was like, okay, let's see what we can do. And then in her mind, she's like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? Now I'm a stage mom, you know, so... But she never talked me out of it. She was always supportive. She's seen almost everything I've done. I can count on one hand, she's missed maybe like 5 shows in my career, you know?
That's so nice.
And so she, I was just in Denver doing a show and she flew out to Denver. You know, my mother is my number one fan and she's been very supportive. And I just have my cousin, Jamal, he just graduated yesterday. With the MFA in film production. So we have, it's all ramped. It's through the family. But only so far, there's like 2 of us that are really pursuing
it. But people appreciate it.
Yeah, they appreciate it.
It makes a big difference when you're trying to talk about the stuff you're dealing with.
Yeah, very supportive and very proud and, you know, and just always sending me love texts or emails saying, you know, I support you, you know, things like that. So
So I want to talk about all sorts of things.
Okay, yes.
But since this just happened to you, I feel like we should just talk about it right away and then we can kind of work backwards.
Okay.
That you just won an Emmy.
Yes. that little thing.
And what's the category officially called? Because I want to say it's not a web series. Exactly.
Well, yeah, I mean,
is that what they call it?
Well, no, they call it, I got Best Supporting Actress in a Digital Drama Series.
Okay.
And so it's interesting because I guess I don't know if I have it right, but from how I understand it, from what they say to us on the show is there's so many different platforms now, right? So many live streams, different ways of being an actress or an actor. Mm-hmm. And they are trying to recognize talent in those areas that have never really been recognized before, and they're trying to grow it and build it.
Right, they see that it's a big
market. Yeah, they see it's a big market. Yeah. And so... it's a new category from what I understand, and to really be able to get together, create your own web series, put it on a platform, but then actually know that some people could actually look at it. Because I learned this as I go, because I had no idea that the Emmys, that I would even get a nomination, or they were even on the radar of the show, or that they even look at those categories, like look at web series, things like that. But apparently that's what they do now. And so I was just like, I'll take it. But yes, the title is Supporting Actors in a Digital Drama Series. And they call it daytime. It was the Daytime Emmys. And I guess because of the platform that it's on, it's under that category. Because, you know, like you have shows like This Is Us or, you know, Empire, things like that. Those are the Emmys. Nighttime Emmys. They don't say nighttime, but those kind of shows. But, you know, it's very interesting to even be considered a daytime show. But I guess it's because you can watch it in the daytime.
Watch it whenever you want.
So it's just I'm learning as I go, but it's very interesting. But it's been surreal. I wasn't expecting to win. And I walk in my house and I look at her and I'm just like, I can't believe you're here. I still feel sometimes out of a body experience because I didn't write anything down when I won. I went up there, I babbled. I was like, I hope I thank my mother. And I went back and I listened to what I said, which was incoherent in the first half of it. But I did thank my mother eventually. I was like, okay, did I thank my mother?
As long as I got that out,
you know? And so, now it's a matter of learning this next level. You know, my manager, he's like, okay, now we have to talk to agents, you know?
Right. This can be like a tool.
A tool.
How and are you going to use
exactly.
that?
Exactly. So that's where we're at right now. Strategizing.
That's great.
So I've been meeting with publicists, trying to find a publicist, you know, a publicist that can work with my budget because...
Right. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. A lot of these publicists are really expensive and I get it. They're worth it. They're worth their money because they do a lot of work. But, you know, meeting with them and saying, okay, this is moving faster than my pocketbook, right? So it's like, I wasn't expecting to win. I have this Emmy, but I need you right now because I really need to get people to know who I am and who's this newcomer on the scene.
Right.
But I don't have $10,000 to pay you, you know, things
right.
like that. And
but
so,
if we can go down the road
yes,
and lead to other things,
yes,
then
I can pay you. So it's like one of those humbling, oh my gosh, conversations because it goes up against my worth in the sense of like, one, I don't want to ask that. Like, I want to be... this is back to my own stuff in my therapy. I want to be that person that walks in with $1 million in the bank and go, I need you. I'm going to pay you $10,000 a month. Let's go. I want to be that kind of powerful woman when I walk in the room. And I don't have that kind of power, which is, you know, okay, because I'm powerful in other ways. But it is a very humbling experience to walk into the room and go, okay, I know on the outside it looks great, but behind closed doors, the reality is I don't have Regina King money. Or, you know, Viola Davis money. This Emmy could help me get there, but are you willing to work with me and help me get to where I want to be so then I can, you know, pay you what you're worth?
We can have a long relationship.
And we can build a relationship. It's about not just right now, whoever I pick on or take on, I want to be with you for years to come. You know, and some are like, no, we don't work that way, and that's fine. And some are like, well, let's do a proposal. Let's see what we can do. So I'm just hoping one of them works out, but it's... dealing with the embarrassment side of it, you know, feeling embarrassed at times because I feel like the expectation is when I walk in the room, like, why am I even here? Because I should have this money. You should pay me this money. And that can not very well be what's happening, but it's my own stuff
right.
that I recognize
totally.
That I put on myself. And then I get embarrassed because I'm like, oh, goodness.
What?
So it just brings up, it's so funny. The Emmy has brought up a lot of my stuff. And I'm like, okay,
I'm
sure
to
running
every
from
extreme.
It. Yes.
Yeah.
And so instead of running from it, I'm going to embrace it and work through it. But it's very interesting what an Emmy can do or whatever level you go because it just brings out your insecurities.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm dealing with.
Well, I'm sure part of it must also be strange that, like, you've been working hard at this for so long. So it's like
yeah.
you say, you use the term, like, newcomer on the scene.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like...
Yeah.
Maybe to this one sliver of the industry, which
True.
This might help you like get into, but you've been around, you've been doing things. Everybody knows you in our circle in New York, at least everybody knows Erin Jerry. So I'm sure that's an interesting thing too, to like feel like the new kid.
Yes. And I completely feel like the new kid on the bottom of the totem pole. And I don't mind working my way up cause I'm a hard worker,
mm-hmm.
but I do, feel like, and this, like I said, may not be the reality, that people are looking down on, like, this new girl, who is she? She has no money. Where does she come from? But, you know, at least people are showing up to meet with me.
Right.
I'll say that.
And I'm sure most of them are not.
Yeah.
That's a lesson I always have to relearn is, like, most people are not thinking about me.
Yes.
They are thinking about their own insecurities.
Mm-hmm.
And they're probably
yeah.
not thinking of
yeah.
how stupid that thing I just said
yes, yeah.
felt to me.
And I'm working on that. I have to
that
just really talk to... I have to really be good to myself and talk
mm-hmm.
to myself in a very loving way, which I welcome, but it's interesting how I just have to remind myself to talk good to myself. And I don't know if that's a woman thing, society thing, because we're just...
Yeah.
We're inundated with so much. And I feel like when I talk to my girlfriends, we're always unlearning and unpacking stuff that society has placed on us that we don't want placed on us. And I feel like that's a part of it.
Right.
Yeah.
Tell me about the show itself that you won
okay.
for. Yeah.
Well, After Forever is on Amazon. It's a story about finding love after 50.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, not me. Because, you know, I mean, I could very well be 60 and look amazing. But I play the best friend of one of the leads, played by Kevin Spiritus. And Brian and Jason are the characters on the show. And he... goes through a lot, and I'll just say he goes through a lot that a lot of people can relate to. So if you watch the show, it's very universal in the sense that you would go, okay, if you've been in love, you love people, you have relationships that are important to you, you're going to connect to the show because it's
right.
all about relationships. And I play Brenda, who is his best friend. And I am there to help him get through things, right? And it's so funny because I'm like, when I say it, I'm like, it's such a cliche. I'm the best black friend, right?
Right.
And so it's interesting because when I talk to one of the writers, Michael Slade, he's one of the head writers, you know, I talk to him about my concerns and he's been very open to say, he's like, we're going to make sure that doesn't happen. Even with the first season, when I sat with him, we connected and clicked right away. And I gave him some insight. I just had questions. I always approach him in a way of like, because my goal is to not cross burn bridges, I guess, but how can I get what I want or need, you know, that can come across without blowing up the whole ship or sinking the ship, right? And I say that in a sense of like, these writers have an idea of how the character should go, and then you read it and you go, okay, well, this is my input, my insight. This is what I'm feeling. What do you mean by this? How do you feel about this? And Michael and I had that conversation, and he was very open with it to me, which I loved because you don't get that a lot. So and I knew right away that he was different and special in that way. And then he went back and he made little changes to Brenda that he felt that what he said to me was, I listened to you, and you really just, you know, got my thinking cap on. And he sent me the script again, let me know what you think. And I was like, this is great. And then
that's so nice.
It's great, right? It was a great feeling. And it's so funny because then he's like, well, it's between you and another person. I was like, what? I was like, well, damn you, Michael, what's going on? How is that possible? And so, and I just remember going, okay, I would love to do this, but whatever my path is, my path is. And I just went on to live my life and living my life like it's golden. And then I get an email from him saying that we really want you to come on board. And it was great because it was very fascinating in the sense of, in hindsight, it was one of those things where I didn't have to audition. Like, you hear stories about
actors. That's what I was going to ask.
No auditioning.
Through friends or how this worked out?
Well, we met through a mutual friend. My friend Melissa Maxwell gave him my name and number and all of that. And he contacted me. And we talked about her, how much we love her. And then it was just meetings. We talked because he was like, he wanted to see me connect. He wanted to see how I understood Brenda at the time when he sent me the script. And it was just, it's an experience I've never had before because, you know, I'm just used to going auditioning, going, you're not right. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then, and you hear stories of actors on different levels, how they said, we had a meeting, we talked about the character, and then here I am sitting having an interview about the movie I just made. Right. And I'm just like, wow,
that's
that is so
nice, Jennifer Lawrence.
You know what? It's so nice, Viola Davis.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, oh yeah, we just met and I just said I like this part and I got the part. And you're like,
it always makes me laugh when on like late night talk shows and stuff, they ask them like, well, how did you decide you wanted to do this movie? And I'm like, it must be so nice to get to that point where that's about you choosing the movie.
Exactly. And that's what...
Not about the job choosing you.
Listen, I keep putting out to the universe, like, I look forward to the day where I just don't have to audition as much. And I hope one day that happens, but I don't like auditioning. It drives me nuts. It fills me with anxiety. The things that actors go through, we love the craft, right? But I was talking to my manager about this the other day. I'm like, I don't like auditioning.
Me either.
I can't master it. I don't get it. And then I feel like as much as I try to show what I can do, it still doesn't come across of what I can do. Like, I see actors, I look at some of their audition tapes, like on YouTube and things, and some of them are good at it. It's a skill and a technique that I feel like I haven't mastered.
But it's different.
And it's different. And then I'm like, and there are actors who, and that's why you hear stories about actors who can walk in a room and nail the room and then they fall apart on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's actors who can't master the audition room, but if they're on stage, they're amazing.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm the person on stage that's amazing, but in the audition room, I fall apart.
Yeah.
And so I just want to get to a place where I just don't like the anxiety that it brings up in me, right?
Yeah.
And I would love to pick and choose the projects that I want or how a black woman are presented in the world. And yeah. And so with this experience, I look back and I didn't have that. Like, we just talked, he came in, he trusted me. He said, I want to give you the part. I came on set and they all took me under their wing. They treated me really well. Kevin Spiritus, who's, you know, more seasoned, because I'm the newcomer as far as when it comes to sets, right? Being on set.
You've done more stage.
Yeah, I've done more stage. I'm a theater girl. Like, my resume is all theaters, right? I've been at the Guthrie, I've been everywhere. And so, and you know, going in that environment, already nervous, But knowing that you can do it, but it's just like, okay, I just don't know how the other people are going to be, the cast is going to be. And when you watch the show, you'll see how much love people have with each other, and you see it reflect in the characters, because in between takes, everybody was getting along, laughing, having a good time. Kevin was good to me. You know, there's certain terms I didn't know, and in between takes, we'd be in the corner running our lines while they changed. Like, it was just a love fest. And so I just really stumbled onto something that was really great, because it could have been no one gets along or there's drama, and there was no drama. There was none of that. And I was like, this is amazing, because there's always one bad apple. And yeah. we didn't have one.
Amazing.
Yeah. I was like, okay, I'll take this. Now, as we go forward, who knows? Because, you know, you become a family and then you bicker like family. You know, I don't, like, ask us if we have
they're planning to keep going.
Yeah, we're going to do season 2 in September. We're going to shoot that. They're already, you know, getting together pre-production and dates and things like that. So I'll know more soon.
But, and they shot here?
We shoot in New York, yeah. So, perfect. Yeah, so second season's going to be happening. And I'm excited about that, and to see where Brenda goes and how she grows and all the characters, really. Yeah. But, yeah, it just never... A journey that started in a coffee shop, never would have thought it would end with an Emmy. It's just, I just want to work. I just want to... I'm just hungry. Yeah, I'm just about the work.
Can we talk a little bit about some of... like, you've done a lot of regional theater, you've done a lot of plays in New York, but, like, in between those, when you're trying to, like, stave off the dark side, when you're not working, like, the kinds of things you've tried to ignite for yourself, projects you've started for yourself, that maybe... No, I'm just putting words in your mouth. That maybe give you some, like, control when you're not in control.
I hear that. It started... this is a long-winded answer. Hopefully I can find the words to get it. I don't know. It's just, this is what's coming to me. I'll say that.
Okay.
So I'm an MFA at Rutgers.
Right.
Graduated. You know, they don't prepare you. You just get out. Even if you take business class, you get out. You're like, what is happening? What is going on? And I've been out 6 months and I don't have my own TV show. Why is that? You know, so you're going through all this stuff. Right. And then I remember my mentor, who was my teacher at Rutgers. I had Bill Espermay, rest in peace. And then I had Maggie Flanagan, both together. And I remember going to Maggie's office at her studio, because I was so just like, what is going on? I don't know what I'm doing. You know, school doesn't prepare you for the first year, second year out in that way, emotionally, spiritually, all of it. And I'm in her office. I'm just boo-hooing, talking, don't know what I'm doing. And so she just looks at me and she goes, well, why don't you come here? Because she has her own acting studio. And I was like, what do you mean? Because I'm like, I do not want to go through training again and kick my butt.
I just paid for that.
You know, I just paid for that. And I'm still paying it off. I'm still in debt. So, you know, she's like, why don't you come here and teach with me? And my ear perked up. I was like, what? And so, and that's how I ended up at Maggie Flanagan's, which I've been there for like 8 or 9 years.
Oh my gosh.
Coaching, teaching cold reading. I do...
classes and individual coaching.
I do private coachings. And then it's a 2-year conservatory and cold reading and monologue class. And it started me, again, this is my path I see in hindsight. Like, walked in not asking for a job, just saying, you're my mentor, help me out, what's going on? And then she's like, you can train with me with the Meisner technique. She's like, there's not that many teachers who study under Sandy Meisner himself. Bill did, Maggie did, and a few other teachers. And then she's like, I want to pass a torch on eventually. And there's not that many women teachers in Meisner. And she's like, you'll be the first African-American woman teaching Meisner. She's like, it seems like all win, 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 win.
She just pulled this.
And then she just pulled this out in that thin air in her office. And I was like, Are you serious? And now she's like, yes. So,
oh my God.
I decided to do that. I trained with her for 3 years just as a teacher. So I had to come to class. I had to sit in class. I had to take notes. I had to check in with her. I had to really get the language.
That was a big commitment.
It was a big commitment. And it was a lot of work. And couldn't go away as much, you know, regionally, because I was like, well, once I'm done with this, I can go wherever I want and teach when I decide to teach, you know. Because Maggie was even like, she's like, you know, if you decide to have a family, you know, in the future, whatever you want to do, she's like, do you have this technique as a teacher where you can just stay in one place and do what you have to do, right?
Right.
So I trained with her for 3 years before I could even touch my own student. And then after that, I was sub, and then I became a coach, because then it's so funny, because after I was done, I started getting regional gigs, right? But it's probably because I was so focused on something else and not the damn career.
That's the way it happens.
That's the way it happens, right? So I'm, you know, walking in the room, booking. I'm like, okay, great, you know, because I'm not like, I have to get this. There's no desperate energy going on. And then that's when Maggie and I were like, listen, because if you're going to teach Meisner for a 2-year conservatory, that's a commitment. And I wouldn't want to leave in the middle of, you know, because I feel like if I start a class, I want to see them all the way through their training. And so then that's when Maggie was like, well, why don't we have you be a coach? So when they need to be put on tape, you want to help them with the grad school auditions, or if, you know, they're stuck in class, I can send them to you, things like that. And so that's how the coaching came about, because I can pick and choose my hours. When I'm in town, I can coach, I can go away. Because Maggie, she still is very big on this. But at the time, she was saying to me, you can do it all. If you want to coach, if you want to teach, because I was like, how am I going to do this? I can't do this. She's like, listen, yes, you can. I don't want you to feel like you can't do it. She's like, I want you to think of it as an expansion. Like, you're expanding. You're just expanding your toolbox.
Isn't that amazing?
And isn't that amazing? I mean, just that's how I ended up at Maggie's, because she took me under her wing, and I still to this day coach. I teach, you know, and when I'm, you know, I don't do as much regional anymore, because I was like, I just don't want to live out of a box anymore, because you get older and you're like, I just can't. Mm-hmm. I don't want it. I have to be, it has to be big for me to go. Like Mark Taper or the Globe, and I'm like, you know, Hamlet, you know, like it has to be something big. But yeah, so that's that. And then so that helped me with the dark times in between, because I love going to class. I love teaching. I love watching them
and
learn.
And as a day job too, right?
And as a day job.
Financially.
So it's so great. And then even with Charlie, he runs the studio now because Maggie's retired. We went to school together. We were in the same class. He's the master, they call him the master main teacher, because he's the head teachers of all the teachers. And then, like, I'll sub for him. There's Karen. I'll go in and sub for her if they're sick or they can't make it. But I teach my classes and I coach, and I love it. So so that helps me. And it makes me a better actress, being a teacher. So that. And then I have my own little talk show called Sundays with a Cherry on Top. And I started that because I just didn't want to wait for the phone to ring. I was like, you know, because of course I want to do film and TV and have financial stability. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, you know what? I can't let that stress me out, because then again, I'm in therapy stressing out about how do I become stable, all those things. And then to keep that from overtaking my psyche, I created this show as an outlet. So, you know, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to start interviewing my friends, mm-hmm. you know, people that I know, I know you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And then just see where it goes and expand. And then when I started reaching out to people and asking them to do this, they would say yes. And I was like, oh, so many people, they want to talk. They want to let people know what they're doing. They want to feel included. They want to talk about their art because they're not getting phone calls for interviews. And I was like, I'm onto something here. So I have season one down. I'm going to do season two. But that's why it was important for me to be here with you today, because I'm like, I understand and I get it. It's like we need to have outlets and we need to support each other. And people supported me. You know, my friend Camila, she was like, she runs the Apollo. She was like, yeah, come to the Apollo. Let's do an interview. I was like, the executive producer of the Apollo said yes to me. You know, when you think about things like, you know.
Take yes for an answer.
And you're like, she could have easily been like, no, girl, I'm too busy. I can't do this.
Right.
You know, I'm thinking about what my friends are doing, where they are. You know, I have a friend that runs the Hope Center in Harlem. And it's an office through a therapist of color, which is very rare, but all the therapists are Black men and women. And, you know, so if somebody who is of color, who is specifically Black, wants a therapist that looks like them, they can go to the Hope Center. I'm like, no one knows about this place.
Yeah.
Let's interview. And that's part of my first season. So it's just, I'm getting creative and like getting an outlet for myself, but also giving other people outlets, because mm-hmm. not many people are picking up the phone going, you know what, I want to interview, you know, the head of the Hope Center in Harlem. And I just feel like it's needed, and it fulfills me, and it keeps me from the dark side.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you came up with that idea, were you also, the medium of doing it as a video,
mm-hmm.
like, were you also thinking strategically about, like, this is somehow the way I want to showcase myself as, like, a host, or was it more just, like, the visual medium is going to be the most interesting to like spotlight these different environments that everybody's in. Or I'm just curious.
I mean, instinctively and honestly, it was just about the visual. And then as I started to do it, my friends will watch the video because I was like, hey, this is edited before I post it. Give me some feedback, things like that. And they were like, oh, this is great. This is, you're good. This is the element. You should think about hosting. And then I started thinking about hosting. And so that's basically how it happened because, and I was like, okay, that's another cap, a feather in my cap I can add. But then I was like, I do not want to do the work as far as trying to find an agent who hosts or, you know, who represents host or trying to build a host reel. I was like, you know what?
It's, yeah, it's weird that that's a...
It's a thing.
It's its own lane now.
It's its own lane now.
But that's great that it's kind of like a happy accident that...
Yes.
If you needed if a I little need reel for hosting.
Yes, I can put one together. Yeah. And so, and I just, I haven't put a reel together. I just, I want to shoot my second season and maybe something out of that. But I, it's interesting to know that now I can add that. Because now when I watch like The Talk or The View, or when I watch political shows and I watch like late night talk shows, I'm like, yeah, I could do that too. But it wasn't something that I was thinking about. But now, but I watch them now because, you know, how to ask the right questions, how to interview people, and really keep the interviews interesting. And plus the, with the being visual, it's like, I want to keep people's attention, right? I don't want them to like watch 5 minutes and go, okay, I'm done. Cherry, this is boring. So really editing how to keep it interesting, not making it too long now, because now it's like, you know, my first season, the episodes are like 15 minutes, but now I'm like, it's so much has happened. So much has changed. Like even with social media and now we have Instagram TV and the snippets are like 2 seconds and I'm like, okay, maybe 15 minutes is too long. So maybe second season will be 10 minutes. You think about those things because you don't want people to turn the channel.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting, but I'm learning as I go with that too. But yeah, I could see myself on The View as a co-host, you know, things like that. So it is on my list, but I'm not, I'm just too tired. Like I just want to just do it because I love it. And I want, like it's you, awesome. I just want to sit with people that I love and know and just talk to them.
I mean, that's what I find with the podcast too, is it just it empowers me so much to have something that I can make without anyone else telling me that I can.
Yes.
Yeah.
You get me. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Do you have someone filming when you do it or you just set up the camera and
I have a camera person. I have Gabriel. Well, I don't know who I'm going to have this second season right now because I'm talking to people. I'm talking to my friend Larry. He has a whole camera thing, and so he might be my guy. We're just looking at times to see if we can match up. But the first season, it was my friend Gabriel Lawrence, and he would come with me, snip, you know, shoot. And then he would edit for me too. So he was like filming and editing and doing all these things. And I kept praising him because I was like, again, back to money, right? It's like, I personally don't know how to edit. If I had to shoot it myself, I would. And I was like, but you have a great eye. Are you willing to come on board and do this for me? Basically for free, because I don't have $30 million to give you. And he was like, yes, because I believe in the project. And the goal is, as I started doing the show, I discovered, I would love it to be something like what Ava DuVernay did with Queen Sugar, is like each episode is directed by a woman, right? And then I was like, oh, that's kind of cool because when after the first season, I was like, you know what? I want to build a team because Gabriel's an actor as well, right? And so there was times where we had to reschedule because he got a job, he had to go away, things like that. And I'm like, great, I support that. But then at the same time, I'm like, maybe I can have a list of editors, and then like every episode can be edited by a different person, and I can put people on the map that way. And then I started asking my musician friends who don't have their music out there. Like one of the episodes, my friend Germano, I was like, hey, can I use one of your songs for one of my episodes? He's like, great, yeah. And I gave him credit. And I was like, okay, so this is what Ava DuVernay is talking about. So I'm going to continue on that, right? Mm-hmm. My cousin just graduated with a MFA in film editing. So I was like, hey, I want you to edit my season one, all of them, like to make a little commercial snippet to get ready for season two. Like just take a little bit from each episode, put it together as a little commercial. And I said, and he's a musician. And I said, let's pick one of your songs. And he was like, oh my God, that's so dope. What? And I was just like, and it made me feel so good.
Yeah.
So I want to continue doing that. Like I would love to have different editors different people coming in and helping me and just keeping, as long as the vision's there, but I want to put other people on the map that way. So when I put them on YouTube, the first season I went through and I gave everybody credit. I put their social media handles. So if people go watch that one of the episodes, they'll see who is exactly on that one, who edited that one and things like right. that. So that's, yeah.
That kind of collaboration just feels so good.
Yeah.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
What other artistic outlets have you found? You mentioned at the very beginning you're doing a little bit of writing. Have you found it useful in your self-care?
Yes and no, in the sense of like the subject matter I'm writing about. I'm like, why am I writing about this? It's dealing with police brutality. I don't want to give too much away, but that's... So there's times when I write and I'm like, okay, oh my goodness, my mind, my heart, what am I saying? What am I doing? Why? But I also want to try. Years ago, I took a writing class, just to see, playwriting class. And a friend of mine taught it and I went as a guinea pig. But then I was like, oh, the exercises she gave. And then I started putting ideas down, but then I got scared, so I put it away. And then with everything happening even more so, just every day you wake up, it's something, right? Climate change, what's going on with 45, I call him 45. And then, you know, just what's going on with the Senate, just, oh, there's so much going on. And I was like, you know, I just really want an outlet, you know, and I grew up journaling a lot. And I was like, maybe it's a healing process to help me if I talk through characters. Because sometimes when I sit down to journal and write, I get overwhelmed for whatever reason. I still haven't figured that out. But just sitting with myself sometimes and just journaling my thoughts and seeing how overwhelmed and how emotional I am and angry I am becomes a lot. So I decided to just write, let the characters say these things. So I have one play, and everything is connected spiritually. Like my plays always have a spiritual element in them, I notice, because I have one play that's almost done. And then I have another play that I want to write. And where I got the idea, I'm just baffled by, but it's a trilogy. And I'm like, you've never written anything in your life. Why are you out here trying to write a trilogy? I'm like, girl, that's what I say to myself. I'm like, why girl, not? I'm like, what is wrong with you?
Why not?
I am so mad at myself. I was like, this is not okay. But I started the trilogy as well. And then I stopped to finish the first play I have in my head. And then I have this journal where I just write ideas of plays, because now that's ideas right. are coming up. And I trust me, I don't write, but I guess I do right now, if you know what I mean. It's this, I've never finished a play before. I've never set, like I've always started or stopped over right. time, but I'm determined to sit down. It doesn't have to go anywhere. No one has to read it. That's what I'm telling myself. Like, I just want to write it. And I just want to finish it. And if I can at least finish one play instead of running from it, I feel like I will have worked through something. So that's what I'm trying to do. I'm really just trying to finish this one play. And I have an idea how I want it to end. And I've been writing it, going through. I have several acts down. And I'm really proud of myself. But I don't want to run from it because of the subject matter. But it's the subject matter that came up for me. And it's very painful. So, yeah, the idea of wanting to finish something heals me. But sometimes I have to stop because I feel like it brings up the dark place because of how close, you know, you see the videos. Yeah. There's so much going on with that. That is just very heartbreaking. And so I want to write about it in some way. I don't want to be silent about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a huge goal to set for yourself too. But what a valuable exercise. Like you said, like even if no one else reads it, or if you become a playwright.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that you channeled your energies into this new form.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's
exciting.
Yeah, so...
That was a question I wanted to ask you if you wanted to talk about it, was like how you've been dealing with this current political climate.
Yeah.
As an artist. Yeah. So that happened.
Yeah. Writing and, talking with friends, and finding safe spaces because I really feel Black and Brown people have to find safe spaces right now, especially now.
Mm-hmm.
And because a lot of safe spaces, if you look at history, were infiltrated by the FBI or broken up, all these, that's a whole nother history lesson, MLK. And, just finding safe spaces to talk about it, but, no one has to know about it. Like, I'm not going to post it on social media because I don't need somebody coming in trying to break it up, things like that. But talking about your feelings, airing it out, crying a lot. I was just talking on the phone to a friend, two nights ago for 2 hours, just talking about the debates, talking about the Supreme Court and what they're doing with gerrymandering. And I'm just like, okay. So that, it just makes me so angry because the gerrymandering is happening because the Black and Brown vote is the most powerful vote. And, and there's these senators who can only stay in office if they gerrymander because they know that they would be voted out. Black and white would vote them out. And for the Supreme Court to say, okay, no, that your local judges can't help you, they can't interfere, and they're just going to allow you to just do what you want, it angers me because, one, people are going to be in office indefinitely. That's what I see happening. And I also see this trickling up to 45 if we don't vote him out or if we don't get him out, mm-hmm. because I just feel like they just handed him the presidency in a way that if people can gerrymander and it's not illegal, they're going to gerrymander in Trump's favor. And it just scares me and angers me. And I just hear people talking about different things. And I feel like a lot of people are focused on the wrong things. But even if we were focused on it, how do we fight this? But I just really feel, in a perfect world, would want Congress to prove that he's an illegitimate president and just undo everything he did. Just be like, you know what? Because you can do that if a foreign government or you get aid, you commit treason, we can just undo everything he did. And I want something like that to happen where they just say, go, okay, well, you know what? You've been found guilty, treasonous, and these judges you've put in, we're going to remove it.
Rewind.
That Supreme Court thing, we're not even going to go there. It's rewind because you're not removing you from office, So I don't know how that looks and will that happen, but in a perfect world, that's what I would want. Just redo everything he's done by proving that he is not fit to be president. Because if you can prove that, then legally you can say...
Well, that's the thing that's so maddening, is that so many times something will come up and then they'll be like, but it's not actually, like, legally. It's like he's broken every precedent ever, but there's not actually a legal something that's wrong with it. And it's just like, it's because everything's out in the open.
Yeah.
That's how I feel. It's like, there's a million reasons why you shouldn't be president. Everybody knows them.
Yeah.
But for some reason, they can't pin down the one thing that is against the law and you should go to jail or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's baffling.
It's so baffling. And so, I have a circle of friends that we talk about things like that.
Good.
Just have a safe environment. Like, to be able to say exactly how you feel. Have your feelings. If you're angry, mm-hmm. you want to throw something. It's like, just where I could be an angry Black woman, right? Because sometimes, I can't walk around with that because the way I'm perceived, right? But to have a safe space to just be able to get those feelings out and not be judged, and being in the room with somebody who has that same feeling with me, it's very important. But it's a very hard time. I'm very scared. I really want the country to do right. Because I look at what happened with Hillary. She got the popular vote.
Right.
So that gives me hope, but I just need, I just feel like the only way we can get him out is if the margins are so big that they can't, because if the margins are closed, he can try to take it, right? But I feel like if the margins are so big, there's nothing he can do because there's unless he literally doesn't care and he takes it and then we have to arrest him or something. But, the country can't survive another 4 years. Yeah.
Anywho.
Yeah, anywho.
let's change the yes. We had to go there, but now
it's... I know, that is like, but you know.
Are there any lessons that you've learned in the last couple of years that you're really proud of that you want to share with me? It could be something big or something very small.
Wow. Such a good question. I feel like I'm learning all the time. But learning to be good to myself is something I've realized, right? Like I was talking earlier about dealing with the self-worth. Mm-hmm. And how it's magnified, and really recognizing it and talking myself off the ledge. That's huge, right? And just giving myself love and say, you know what? It doesn't, like I say this a lot because it's something I've learned. I feel this way, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's the reality, right? And just really saying that out loud so I don't fall off the deep end, right? Mm-hmm. That's huge for me because I could feel so many things, and then I could easily make it a reality. Like, I just feel like that's what's going on. And then once I get through it, I look back, and I'm like, oh, that wasn't really the reality of it. And also to the people that you know who are there for you no matter what, you just want to keep them close as a glove. That is huge for me. Sometimes I can hibernate or not see them or love them as much as I should. And just realizing those four or five people, I mean, if they're gone, then you have no lifeline.
Yeah.
And that is something that I'm nurturing with them. Like, I have a small village, I call it my tribe, that I can just be my 100% self around, and that's very rare, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't, and that's all you need is four or five. You don't need a whole bunch, right? And so I just really, I need just making sure I'm around more, making sure that they know I love them, and that that we spend time together, because I get it. You don't see each other all the time. Time goes by, but it can't be 8, 9 months, 10 years, you know, things like that. With those specific people.
Best friends.
Yeah, with those specific people.
Chosen family.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Some people you're like, oh, I'll see them when I see them. But the ones that you have your back, you just want to nurture. Just nurturing them is important to me.
When you do find yourself in that dark side, are there any really tangible tools that you reach for again and again, like a book you reread or music you listen to? I know we talked about working out.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that you come back to.
I love incense.
Mm-hmm.
I love sage. So like I'm always about changing the energy. Palo Santo. I will walk in my house. I'll sage. I'll open the windows and I'll go through and I'll sage and I'll say a prayer. Or, you know, mm-hmm. If I'm feeling energy from my dark side and I want it out of the house, out this Palo Santo, I'll bless. This is a very spiritual thing. I have an altar, and I have my grandparents on there, and I have my grandfather's pipe. I have different things from my family on there. I have money on there, right? I have a $2. My grandmother, when I was growing up, used to always give me $2 bills,
mm-hmm.
and I have a $2 bill on there. And I just, because I believe they're here with me, and I believe that they hear me when I talk to them. And I know not everybody has that belief, but this is something that I do to get me through. So I'll talk to them at the altar. But yeah, I literally will change the energy of my room by saging. I think that's important. And then I do I have rituals that I do. Like, you can do basil baths. You can boil water in basil, and you can Google it, like different kinds of ritual baths. Mm-hmm. And stand in the shower and just pour it over yourself and like give yourself a prayer, things like that. Like, self-care, it just has to be. Yeah, but those are some tangible things that people can try or you could take away. But it's like finding ritual baths that you feel that, you know, I do. There's some for New Year's Eve, there's some for all different kinds of occasions. And there's some for like whatever you're feeling or how you want to get rid of it. You just, you know, get your roots, of certain kind of roots, and you boil them, and you take the water, you stand in the shower, and you just let it go down the drain.
Water is my therapeutic element.
Oh, nice.
So I need to try
So try some of those. Yeah. Yeah. The Google and see what works for you. Especially if you're inclined to water, that'll benefit you even more.
And then the final question is there anything that you've seen recently of any art form that you want to recommend?
Ooh.
Like friends shows or books or
Ooh. Oh my goodness. Okay. What have I seen that I recommend? Oh my goodness, I've seen so many things. Okay. The one that's still sticking with me now is Secret Life of Bees, and that's at the Atlantic.
Okay.
And it's with LaShawn's, Saquon, Issa Davis. Those are the names that come into mind. There's other names, but I can't picture them. I mean, I can't get the names right now. But
and it's still running.
Now. It's still running, and it's a musical based on the movie and the book, taking a lot of things from the book more so than the movie. But it was just, it was just beautiful to see these black women on stage singing, and I don't want to give it away, but there's a ritual that takes place, and I was like, this is what I needed, because I'm all about rituals anyway, so it was perfect. And so I recommend people see Secret Lives of Bees if they can go and see that. I think that'll lift their spirits, because it's a beautiful musical. It's beautiful. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Jerry, thank you so much. I'm glad. Thank you for reaching out again.
And yeah, of course.
Made it happen.
I'm glad I have to. I'm like, I'm here. And like I was saying earlier about the nurturing thing, is like, I'm reaching out to people. I'm like, I'm here. Let's spend some time together, because, you know, before I get busy again. But I just feel like, especially with everything that's happening in my life, mm-hmm. This is the only thing that comes to mind, but it's cliche, like they say, it's lonely at the top. Like, I'm not at the top, like, where I still feel like I can continue to grow.
Right, but you're riding this wave right now.
But, yeah, I'm riding this wave right now, and I don't want to be isolated in it, because I can easily just hunker down and go, goals, 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 in it, what I got to do, where I have to be, I'm going to be in L.A., and, like, not talk to anybody, and just be, and then you wake up, and you're like, oh, I want to hang out, and, like, but if you don't nurture those relationships, exactly. Right? And so that's important to me. And I don't want to do this journey by myself. And so I feel like the people that, like I said, I went through, and I was like going through my emails, and I'm like, the people that I adore. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh yeah, we said we're going to do this interview. I'll have time. We're going to do it. You know? And so it's important to me, especially during this time, that I nurture.
Yes.
So,
your community.
Yeah. That's what I want
to
do.
I really appreciate it. It was such a pleasure.
I'm so glad to
get to really connect.
Yes. Because it's been a long time.
It has. Listening to the Compass Podcast. If you find these conversations valuable to your life as an artist and would like to support the ongoing production of The Compass, please consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/thecompasspodcast. Pledges start at as little as $1 a month. You'll get access to bonus content, and anything you can give would be greatly appreciated. Also, if you have a moment, please rate or review in iTunes. Every little bit helps other listeners to find the podcast. I'd like to thank the following people for their generosity. The Compass cover art is by Kim Miller, music by Brendan Spieth, audio assistance from Nick Choksi, and a special thanks to Frankie J. Alvarez. See you next time.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.